Hello and welcome to the Don't Call It Soccer pod. And this is going to be the only time we're going to call it soccer because we really don't like to use this word on the pod, despite the fact that we talk about a league that has the name with starting with an S firmly embedded in it. But thankfully, we have two competitions to talk about and a whole bunch of other stuff, so it won't come up too much. I'm your host, Manuel Weff, and I'm joined today by Javier in Toronto. How are you doing, Javier?
I'm doing very good. Thanks for the invite. This should be a very interesting show, considering that while we record, we have Mexican league games happening. So it should be fun. A fun show.
Always fun when we talk about Liga MX. I mean, always enjoy talking about it. We have another really fun competition too, you know, the Major League and unforbidden word to say competition. So MLS, lots to talk about. But Preston, you're down in Texas. Always lots of MLS action there too. How's it going down there?
It's going well. There's a lot of good stuff going down here in Dallas. They're in the midst of the Generation Adidas Cup and the Dallas Cup, two huge youth football tournaments that are both going on in Dallas at the same time. So there's plenty of football going on down here. It's great.
And you managed not to say, yeah, I'm not going to say it. But, you know, you're talking huge football, big announcement on Monday. And I mean, we're talking an enormous announcement for CONCACAF. Preston, tell us, your country announced the World Cup bid and took my country and your neighbors to the south along for the ride.
Yeah, so earlier this week, United States Federation, they announced that they are making a formal bid for the 2026 World Cup jointly with Mexico and Canada. The way that they have it split up is that U.S. will host 60 matches, Mexico and Canada will host 10. Why they have it that way, I have no idea. It just seems a little bit like Mexico and Canada drew two short straws out of the bunch. But it's now official that there will be basically a CONCACAF bid for the newly expanded 2026 World Cup.
Javier, you're in Toronto. I mean, I have my own very personal opinion about this, but I'm at a part of Canada that's getting often very much ignored by your part of Canada. So talk us through how was the reaction in Toronto about this bit?
Well, in a Canadian perspective, it's super, super interesting and attractive, right? Because Canada, how can I say this subtly? It's not a favorite to get into the World Cup. By any chance?
Wow, that's super diplomatic.
So this will allow them to be a part of the greatest football show on earth, right? So, and considering how football is constantly growing from the last 2 years here in Canada, it's the timing is great, the opportunity is great, the stage is going to be amazing. Like Preston mentioned, yeah, it's kind of unfair. Like, I would like to understand what's the reasoning behind only hosting 10 games. Maybe infrastructure, maybe that's all they could manage to get out of the bid. It's definitely interesting to discuss about. But as a Canadian perspective, it's definitely huge. Now, it's not only to be analyzed from the Canadian perspective. Given that that spot that would Canada get, it's the one spot that usually countries in CONCACAF, like Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, Honduras, actually fight for. So for them, it's definitely frustrating, given that they will make the classification to that World Cup even harder. So it's interesting.
Yeah, but, you know, to be fair, there will be extra spots because this tournament is another expansion. We're going from 32 to 48 teams, right? Which means that there is, in a sense, another 16 spots available. Wow, that sounds like so many teams. We should just invite everyone and play a mega World Cup around the world. Or I shouldn't say this too loud. FIFA could get ideas. Anyways, in a sense, from what I've read, we're expanding from 3.5 automatic spots to 6.5. And I'm saying 0.5 because there's a weird playoff tournament, and they host Confederation gets a spot in that playoff tournament, which essentially means that because this is going to be a CONCACAF tournament, right? There's a half spot added, so the team will still have to play for it. So in some ways, nothing that much changes, right, Preston? Because there will be still quite a few spots available. In a sense, only half a spot less available than they usually would be for a World Cup.
Yeah, it does seem like that's the case. I mean, looking at CONCACAF specifically, there's going to be 6.5 spots. If those three are taken by U.S., Mexico, and Canada, that leaves 3.5 spots available. If you look at the current formats, I believe CONCACAF has 4.5, I believe.
Yeah.
No, 3.5, actually, because the fourth one goes into the playoff. So in reality, for this 2026 bid, assuming that this joint bid is the selected one, I don't think the qualifying will necessarily change too much, at least for this specific World Cup cycle. Going forward, they could get rid of the hex altogether. They could adopt more of what the CONMEBOL does or what UEFA does, or some variation of the two. So looking at qualification going forward, it's going to look very different, but I don't think it will be for the 2026 cycle. I think it will be for the 2030 cycle.
Yeah, looking at that, I mean, it's pretty sure to say that the three host countries will get automatic qualification. I mean, with the United States, it would be obvious because they're hosting 60 out of the 80 games that are going to be played in this tournament. In other words, three-quarter. So it'd be silly, of course, not to give it to them. And I mean, there's never been a case where the host country or a host country was not given a spot. But there has been some debate about, you know, the 60-10-10 format and the fact that, you know, Mexico and Canada basically give them a free ride for just hosting 10 World Cup games. But, you know, given sponsorship and given the importance of having these countries there to attract sponsors. I mean, when we're talking about in Canada, the possible two host cities for me anyways would be Toronto and Vancouver, right? Because they are probably the most ready when it comes to hosting a World Cup now. So you would want to have the Canadian national team being able to put them on the showcase, wouldn't you, Javier?
Definitely. And it's going to be interesting to see how it works, because the bigger area that you cover in the World Cup, it's you're getting yourself deeper into a market that you might be exploring. And since players now find attractive business in expanding their brand, I think that expanding the range of the World Cup might make it more attractive to those players to actually be looking to do business while they play, right? So if you cover Canada and Mexico, which are important, well, Mexico more than Canada, but Canada is growing as a football market, it's going to be attractive for those players. And
this was something that was brought up at the press conference by Sunil Gulati, the USSF president, so the United States Soccer Federation. I'm allowed to say it. It's in the name. he said, and I found this statement very intriguing, that he said ultimately it will be up to FIFA, but that they want to spread the tournament around the country as much as possible. So in the United States, you will see multiple host cities. And I mean, I find the statement intriguing because I've worked with FIFA on stories, and you know, you guys know that I quite closely cover the development leading up to Russia's World Cup. And I know that FIFA actually has not very much input when it comes to selecting host cities. So this is a statement that completely threw me off, because when I asked FIFA why were Russia and Brazil told that they had to have so many host cities, FIFA said, we don't care how many host cities they have. There's a minimum, which is 8. And we encourage countries to do go with the minimum. But when it comes to the actual selection of host cities, FIFA doesn't have very much influence. The only influence that they have is that the stadiums built in those host cities meet criteria. But it's actually up to the host countries to select the cities and make sure that those cities actually meet minimum standards to host the games. So I was very intrigued by the statement. And is this maybe even potentially a first hitch that they don't even yet quite understand how a FIFA bid works? Because Gulati is always being hyped in US media, especially as this person that can really, you know, make backdoor deals and how he helped in elect Infantino and all that. But this particular statement, it seems like they still have a lot to learn when it comes to the actual rules of the game and how to go and proceed with a World Cup bid.
You know, I found that interesting as well. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he said that to sort of help spread the popularity of the game throughout the country, looking at the U.S. specifically. With the expanded format, with there being so many group stage games, and with it being spread so far between three countries across an entire continent, basically, do you think they're going to have to regionalize the group stage matches? So that way it's not a situation like in Brazil, where you had to travel nearly 1,000 miles for a single group stage match.
Yeah, it would make sense, wouldn't it, Javier?
Definitely. I was actually, those were one of the points I was going to make, is that definitely you need to do that in order to expand the range as much as the bid suggests. And that's where maybe the nostalgia hits me a little bit, is that sometimes when you're in the World Cup, you feel like you're in the middle of the football world, right? And if you're now in a tournament that includes three countries include an area so vast as Canada, US, and Mexico, you kind of lose that, right? So I understand that there's a business reason behind what they do. It's just that sometimes the essence matters, right? So maybe that's just the nostalgic person in me, but it's a little sad.
But I think it's an important point, because I was in Germany in 2006, and it was a very successful tournament. You know, it's always hyped up as the most profitable tournament and highest attended tournament after the one in the United States. And it was maybe the tournament that was in some ways the best organized, because it was easy to get around, right? Because Germany is a relatively small country. And it really, you had, when you were in the country, you were in the World Cup country, the host country. I was in Brazil. It was an amazing feeling too. I enjoyed the Brazil World Cup quite a bit. I thought, you know, Rio was amazing, and we won the tournament, so that helped. But I think that Brazil is a World Cup, is a football country. You know, it is perhaps even the football country. And I can see, this is what worries me about the regionalization of the tournament and the fact that Mexico will only get 10 games. I think Canada will be fine with the 10 games, because we only really have two or three host cities. In reality, we only have two, because the one time Montreal got to host a mega event like the Olympics, it was an absolute disaster. And I don't think the city wants to go anywhere near hosting a mega event again. So I think maybe it's best not to let them. But when it comes to Toronto and Vancouver, those two cities are very modern, straightforward city. BMO Place could easily expand it to host World Cup games. Now it's a modern, very good looking facility, isn't it, Javier? So I think for Canada, it'll be fine. But for Mexico, Mexicans probably will not feel like they're going to be in a World Cup, in a country that's hosting the World Cup, because I can only see really Mexico City hosting the tournament, right?
Mexico, I would suggest that it's got the shortest end of the stick though here, because Mexico is a country that's able to be an important, like a host of a mega event, right? They've done it before, and they have the means to actually meet the requirements to host them themselves. I don't have the data here, but I would suggest that Mexico is ready to host it by themselves.
Yeah, I would go along with that. I mean, they hosted it twice, and both those World Cups have gone down in history as two of the most beautiful World Cups ever hosted by a country. So, you know, I would agree. I think a probably fair format would have been a 50-20-10 spread, or even a 40-30-10 spread. I think, you know, of course, we as Canadians, we feel maybe a little bit shortened, but 10 games is probably, considering the size of this country population-wise, we're only 10% of the United States, is probably fair. I know a lot of Canadians will say it's not, but it probably is. But I feel Mexico definitely got the short end of the stick in this one. But, you know, I've also heard it's not set in stone. So this is a development, and, you know, as we are all in this region, an exciting region that's growing enormously in football, we will probably cover this story more often as we go forward with our pod. But I want to move this pod to what's actually happened in our league. And Preston, you have an interesting statistic about MLS this week.
Yeah, so I was taking a look at the table, and right now there are three unbeaten teams in the league, in SC Dallas, Sporting Kansas City, and Toronto FC. On the flip side, there are two winless teams still, Montreal and Philadelphia. So I figured we could chat for a bit, see what these three clubs are doing right and what these two clubs maybe need to fix in order to get their first win of the season.
Oh, Javier, you're a tactics expert. I'm going to totally throw that one at you first.
So let's start with Dallas. Dallas in style, it probably is one of my favorite teams in MLS, just because I'm a big fan of defensive football. If you heard my 11 Pieces of Me podcast in the World Football Index, you'll understand in a more profound way how or why. Anyways, I like Dallas a lot, especially because of their defense. Now, what's interesting about Dallas this season is that they have moved even deeper, right? Because since Diaz's injury, they haven't had the right flow of game to move, to build up, right? So now they sit deeper, defend very strongly, and they do it right, and they do it smartly, right? And have created opportunities and have scored enough goals for them to be unbeaten and actually looking good at it. Because as we'll talk about Toronto, being unbeaten, it doesn't mean that you're playing good and you look well and things work. It just means that you haven't lost, right? In Dallas' case, I think that they're looking good.
Well, that's exciting for you.
I think.
Well, Preston, that's...
Oh, yeah.
No bias, Preston. But you must be really excited about what's going on in Dallas once again.
Oh, of course, yeah. It's some very good stuff. And covering FC Dallas week in, week out, I've got to pin it onto two things. The emergence of Walker Zimmerman and the partnership that he's created with Matt Hedges has been absolutely unbelievable.
I love them.
I was at the start of last season, I was probably the biggest Zimmerman hater there was. I didn't feel like he was good enough to make it into the starting 11, but the way that he improved his game over the 2016 season proved me completely wrong. And I'm probably one of the biggest Zimmerman advocates now, just based off of what he's been able to accomplish over this last year. The other hand of it, with Diaz's injury, Kellen Acosta has been a player that's really emerged from it, being the sort of the new midfield general, and has really taken ownership of his position and has been adding goals to it as well. The only weak spot that I see is our goalkeeping situation. I don't see Chris Seitz. I don't think he's a top eight goalkeeper in the league. With that being said, though, FC Dallas has conceded only two goals this season, and both of those are from penalties. And I've got to give a lot of credit to the defensive line, only allowing so few shots. But I don't see the no goals from open play. I don't see that lasting much longer.
Dallas has been always an organization that has done really well. It's not a huge surprise that they are up there again, and they always seem to be there about. You know, and they done very good work in the CONCACAF Champions League. I mean, we all watched the game against Pachuca, and it was very unfortunate that they did go out. And I thought they gave Pachuca a lot better fight than Vancouver did in the other semifinal. But, you know, I kind of want to transition it to Toronto because, Javier, this is the team, of course, in the city that you live in. They came within a penalty of winning the MLS Cup last season. And by most accounts, have the most expensive team by salary in the league. You know, rumors are between $25 and $26 million a season to spend on players. And I did watch them twice. And, you know, I watched them, of course, when they were here in Vancouver. And I thought that they were okay until, you know, Breck Shea's glory moment. And
the Muppet. I get points for that.
Breck Shea is definitely at 105. But you know, I felt that they had that extra class. But the one thing that has been missing from them is Jovinko. He has been mostly absent until this weekend when they played Atlanta. And I thought, you know, what a goal he scored! Jose Altitor's assist was you know, and the finish was just incredible. But you know, is that a hangover from going deep into the playoffs and that disappointment and having to shake it off and having that feeling like, oh, here we go again. We have to go through this regular season. We have to go to playoffs. Is that what's going on there?
So for me, Toronto has a few issues that are that they need to work as they go, right? So for example, they are going through injuries and rest, right? So they've been resting Altidore for the last two games because of their like of his presence in the US team. And that matters because now apparently the MLS teams feel that TFC is one of the top contenders, which they are right. But that means that most of the games that they play against Toronto, they sit very deep and there's Toronto to attack them, right? And doing that with Tosan Ricketts instead of Jozy Altidore is extremely hard, right?
Yeah.
So that's, that matters. Then you have injuries, right? So last year, when Irwin got injured, Alex Bono was fantastic. Now, Bono versus Atlanta was not very good.
Okay? Don't be diplomatic, man.
Okay, he was awful. Okay? He was terribly awful. He was, and most of all, he was disappointed because the whole fan base was saying like, okay, Irwin got injured, but don't worry. That's why we have Bono as a backup. And he did very good last year. Cool. And then he didn't this year. Right. So versus Atlanta, Alex Bono was very, very, very bad, like I mentioned. So injuries also matter. Now, the final point is the transition with the new players. Right. So you have the introduction of Mauro Vasquez, which it's one of the bright side of the season because he has been very, very good. He eases Bradley's work and eases Jovinko's work. Right. Like it makes it easier for them to create opportunities. Because Vasquez is very good at passing, is very smart at reading spaces and finding gaps. So, like, he and making runs, he actually makes it easier. And he's replacing Osorio, which is not one of my favorite players. I'm not a big fan of Osorio. And I, besides the fact that he runs a lot and he's very passionate to play, he doesn't provide a lot, right? Whereas Vasquez is very useful. Now, the other player that is also being introduced to the team is Mavinga, that was guilty of at least one goal versus Atlanta last match. So he also needs to be introduced and like understand how he's how he should be playing as a left center back, right? So it's a whole group of stuff that's happening to TFC all at the same time. I think, like you said, that it's one of the most talented rosters in the league. So I think and I feel that they figure it out because they have the roster, the talent, the players, and the coaches to do it.
That was actually my next question for you. Because how do you feel about Craig Vanney? There was a lot of criticism on his selection and the way he put together the team last season and in the playoff run and not being able to get the best out of this group in the final. Do you think he is the right man?
I constantly disagree with Vanney, I'm not going to lie, but I do have confidence in him because he was able to build a foundation, a structure of a team, right? And work around it. So when he established the foundation, like the three-man defense, like Bradley doing what he does best and then finding the best, getting the best out of Jovinko throughout the season and getting Altidore to the point where he was in the last play where he was unmatchable, I think that he just needs to work around the small details around the team, right? That how they're susceptible to counterattacks, right? So he needs to drill on that because that's important. That's how Atlanta beat scored against TFC, and that's going to happen constantly because, like I said, most of the MLS teams now see TFC as a top contender. So once they face them, they hold very deep and then look for counterattack. Which, for example, Montreal has been doing to TFC for the last two seasons, right? So, like, teams know that Toronto is beatable by counterattack. Again, like, I think that I trust Vanney because he did the hardest part, is that get your top players to contribute in key moments and building the structure of the team. Now, let's work on the small details and hope that the injuries stop. Hope that the new players transition into the team and start moving forward.
And that's a very important point because one of the things that we have to remember, he basically took a team that was perpetual playoff failure, you know, not making the playoffs forever and ever, and finally got them there. And the season before last season, of course, short playoff run, but going all the way to the final and really being a little unlucky. Some people may say it came down to coaching, but you know, it was one penalty and the game goes a different direction. So I think, you know, you outlined some very important points here, and the fact that he has turned this team into a playoff contender is something quite remarkable, in my opinion, anyways. And I think now is the really big question is, and thankfully in MLS, you have that luxury, right? That you can tinker quite a bit, because as long as you make the playoffs, you're fine. A lot of the things that you outline are very important, right? But I mean, that is really the next step, isn't it? To get them built on what happened last year and make sure that this they can do it year in, year out.
Exactly. And build a team that is able to take that next step, that last step, right? So you have to take advantage of the players in their right moment of their careers, right? Like, you have to take advantage of Jovinko now, of Altidor while he's healthy, and so on, right? So the window is there and it's not that tight, but you still have to take it, right? So hopefully Vanny is the coach to take TFC to the next step.
And that's a really, I find, you know, you mentioned Montreal. You put them down as one of the two teams that are still winless, right, Preston? But we have to remember that they were in the semifinal of the Eastern Conference against Toronto last season.
Yeah, I mean, they put together a very strong season last year, and they've still got the majority of their pieces together. I'm not too sure why they haven't been able to get it to click this season. I was looking at their games that they played, and their two draws, they came from a struggling Los Angeles Galaxy and a mid-table San Jose. It seems like that they're struggling to get their pieces together in their attack. It could be an issue that, Xavier, you might have a little bit more intel on it. I'm not too sure how much you follow Montreal, but it could be an issue that they're struggling with connecting their midfield into their attack. I'm honestly not too sure why Montreal is struggling to get goals.
Go for it, Javier. I know you're itching.
Preston, don't worry. Xavier and Javier both work, so don't stress too much about that. Growing up, I had so many nicknames that I'm not very demanding about my name, so don't stress too much. Now, in regards of Montreal, so I do agree with you. It's in part the build-up that it's been lacking, but I think it's a transition of how the roster has changed in the last few years. And now that, obviously, without Nacho Piatti, it's very difficult to go from having Piatti to not having Piatti. And I think that there's not much coherence between how their roster is built and how they play, right? Because since you have such a fast forward line, you should be looking to exploit that pace, right? But since that has not been working this season, you have to experiment a little bit. And that's when I got to the point in which I will suggest that Montreal needs to start pressuring higher and start creating forward up the field, right? Because their build-up has not been very effective. So building from the back and holding and defending deep has not been working. So they need to start pressuring higher. Like, maybe use Sporting Kansas City a little bit as an example. Is how to move your line forward and force mistakes up front. That's what I would say that Montreal needs to start doing. And again, like, I don't want to put so much responsibility, but like, having Nacho Piatti back will also help in the future. But I think that like the game versus the Galaxy was a good example, right? Like, for example, versus Galaxy, Montreal had lower possession than them, right? Lower amount of passes than Galaxy, and still got less tackles and less recoveries than Galaxy. That's unusual, and that shows lack of organization, lack of coherence in what they want to do and what the players understand that they need to do. So I will say that they need to start like experimenting and going to something more aggressive as a defensive strategy, and maybe start creating from forward up the field instead from the back.
And they have a very good opportunity to do that this upcoming weekend, because they're playing a fast-paced attacking team in Atlanta, to where if they sit back, they could get easily exposed. So they may be forced into playing a little bit of a more attacking game.
You know, and I saw them against Chicago. This is the one Montreal game I have seen this season. Chicago signed some guy, pretty famous, so I had to see it.
El Tigrillo. Yeah.
But
just re-signing.
And yeah, I'm sure Chicago will now go to the World Cup. But, you know, I did think that Montreal actually looked pretty good. And especially in that counter-attack game, I thought that they were really fast. And the one thing that they maybe lacked at this point, and, you know, MLS is such a different beast than any other competition in football competition in the world, because you can afford to kind of waste a few games to experiment in the beginning of the season. So everything that we kind of see now might not have any bearings by the time we get into the fall, right? But I thought that the foundation of it looked pretty good, and there were some young players. They had some speed. I think what was quite obvious is that they needed a piece that held it all together and they formed it into a unit that could go move forward quickly, and then develop more punch and more possession game, because they were completely outpossessed by Chicago even when Chicago was a man down. So that was something that I really noticed with Montreal, and I think that's probably the lack of Piatti, isn't it, Javier? I mean, he's such an important player.
Piatti, yeah, I think that you couldn't put it in a better way. Piatti is the player that holds the other pieces together, right? And gives them purpose, right? Yeah. Because it's not just about possession. It's not about playing and having the ball. It's about having purpose, doing it with purpose. Even if you play in a vertical style of play, like extremely vertical, go at it, run, pass, shoot, or even like just pass, look for your chance, create that space and find the key pass, it doesn't matter. You have to do it with a purpose. You have to have in mind what your pass is creating and what the player receiving and passing again, it's also creating, right? So I think that Piatti is key. Even like if you want to keep your current defensive strategy and counterattack system, Piatti is key. And if you want to move it into a more aggressive defensive style, which I would suggest given the roster that they have right now, Piatti is key. So hopefully they get him back soon. Well, as a Montreal fan would want, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's also just fun to watch. He's a reason why people turn on the television and watch football. But another reason why people turn on the television and watch football is derbies or, you know, regional clashes. And there is what we call out west here, the Cascadia Cup. The Cascadia is, of course, the Pacific Northwest. It's Oregon, Washington State, and British Columbia. And there is a strange phenomenon in MLS that there is trophies within the tournament, right, Preston? I mean, there is certain teams have created fan-owned trophies, and the Cascadia Cup is one. It's actually a fan-owned trophy that is given to the team that's finished the Cascadia standings first at the end of the MLS regular season. And last year, that was my team, the Vancouver Whitecaps. It's the only trophy that we won last year, so it was a big one. But it's strange, isn't it, that we have trophies within the league, and I'm pretty sure the Cascadia Cup is not the only one.
Oh, definitely not. Looking at Dallas, for example, Dallas actually has two. They have their original fan-owned cup, which is the Brimstone Cup, which is between FC Dallas and Chicago Fire, was more famous whenever Dallas was known as the Dallas Burn. I've a little bit play on words with the Fire, with it being Brimstone Cup. Now that they're in different conferences, they only meet once a season, so it's not as big. The big one is the Texas Derby between FC Dallas and Houston Dynamo. For this one, it's not a trophy. It's actually a cannon, a real-life working
cannon. Okay, you guys win. We right, just I'll get some that. Stupid silver trophy with a wooden socket.
So the winner of the series gets to own the cannon for that following season. Dallas was the owner for the previous three seasons until they had their blip last season when they lost 5-0 to Houston, which just ultimately destroyed the aggregates for Dallas. So that's the big one. I'm pretty sure the two New York clubs probably have a derby. I don't think they have a trophy yet, as far as I'm aware of.
They shouldn't be allowed to. Like, come on. What are you going to play for? A can of Red Bull? Yeah, but, you know, the Cascadia Cup is actually really important up here. And, you know, the Pacific Northwest is, in some ways, the heart of football in North America. And, I mean, both in Canada and in the United States. Portland is soccer town USA. And, again, I say it with the S word because, you know, it's in the name. And when you drive into Portland, there is Portland Timber signs all over the city. It is the team of the city. And it's similar in Seattle, and it's certainly similar in Vancouver too. And this trophy can literally save a season. I mean, remember we won it on goal aggregate. All three teams were on even points at the end of the season, and Vancouver were horrible last year, missed the playoffs, but they won this trophy and it almost fixed, the standing of the, Carl Robinson almost was able to actually sell the season as a success because they won the Cascadia Cup. I have my doubts because, you know, on the end of the day, it doesn't send you to the playoffs. It doesn't get you to the CONCACAF Champions League like the Canadian Championship does, which is another odd tournament that the Canadian teams play to determine the CONCACAF seed. So, you know, there is some really odd things happening within MLS and some trophies and rivalries that are always worth checking out. It probably doesn't compare what happens south to the border. I mean, when you look at rivalries in Liga MX, it gets second to none. And it wasn't one of the major rivalries, but it's certainly turning into one. And we watched this game actually together, didn't we, Preston? Tigres against Chivas. It was a big one. And it could be a game that could actually salvage this Tigres season.
Yeah, and I apologize for being ahead of the stream and giving away one of the goals. But yeah, Tigres has been fully focused on the CONCACAF Champions League that they've, in a sense, they've sort of ignored the Clausura. And now that they're heading into the final, and with the Clausura getting pretty close to its end and getting close to the playoffs, they're a couple points away from a playoff spot. So they were there ready to play, and Gignac had an unbelievable game with two goals off of headers. His second one in particular was just unbelievable, coming in from across. His motion was going in a completely different direction, headed it perfectly, bounced off the upper 90 and went in to ultimately seal the game for them to win 3-0. But it put them back into playoff contention, which was really good, which is really good for Tigres, being one of the top teams. It'd be almost a crying shame if one of the top clubs like Tigres did not make it into correct me if I pronounce it wrong, but it's into the Liga.
Javier, that's
that
for
sounds
you.
Good. Yeah, that sounds very good.
Passes the Spanish test. But, you know, Javier, I actually this question was going to go to you next, because, you know, you are more familiar with this Apertura Clausura, being from South America, right? And a lot of leagues down there do that. And we see that quite often, that if a team wins the Apertura, their focus shifts for the second half of the season because they already got the trophy, right? They're usually in a continental championship, so they focus on that. So, you know, this happens quite frequently, doesn't it?
It does. And it matters because teams that usually don't have a chance to compete against the big teams, now they have a chance, since those big teams are probably focused all in the International Cup. For example, like right now in Ecuador, we have Barcelona that is playing lights out in Libertadores. Like, they beat Estudiantes like yesterday, and in the first match they beat Atlético Nacional. But in the Ecuadorian league, they're like seventh and playing like poorly, right? And that just shows that they are completely focused on the International Cup. And that's how, like Preston's mentioned, like, I think that Tigres is going through that as well, right? Mm. Now, in all fairness, right, I have to mention that. And Tigres' three goals, that Chivas' defense, it's depressing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this because we chatted about this, and I think depressing is maybe not even the right word. I have to give it to Gignac. That header is perfectly placed, but he shouldn't be able to make it in the first place, right?
Like, absolutely. Like, okay, the striker always have to still score it, right?
Mm.
But the defense have to make it extremely hard for him to score it. And that was not the case, right? Near the first one or the third one. Now, the second one, how can the ball go through five set of legs? It beats me. I have no idea. But again, like, you have to score them. And Tigres did. And I'm completely certain that Tigres will make the Liguilla. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure too. I was very fortunate actually that I got to meet Ferretti, the head coach of Tigres, when they were here last week in Vancouver. It wasn't a great ending for Vancouver, but you know, we all expected that Tigres would pretty much steamroll the Whitecaps. And, you know, he's a very kind man and a very intelligent man and very well-spoken man too. And, you know, he's quite adamant that they're going to turn it around. And, you know, I was able to speak a couple to the press people and they were saying, look, we have never won an international trophy. We've never won one. And we want to go to a Club World Cup. We have the most expensive team in the Western Hemisphere and we want to play against the likes of Real Madrid, Bayern München, etc., whoever wins the Champions League, right? And that is their goal. And I can see that. And that goal, you know, that weight of has basically been lifted off their shoulders more or less because they're at the final now. And I felt watching this game, you know, I've seen a whole bunch of Tigres games leading up to this game and it always felt heavy. The build-up play wasn't there. There wasn't that fluidity that they had when they won the Apertura, it just wasn't there. And when you look at the talent that the squad has, it was really surprising for me. And it feels like almost there was a weight lifted off their shoulders that they, okay, it's like, look, we reached this goal. We're now in the final against Pachuca. We can handle Pachuca. We've played them all the time. We can now sort of see if you, let's make the Liguilla, right? Make the playoffs. And I'm pretty sure I'm with you. You know, there's still enough games left. They're gonna make that second stage. And, you know, once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen, right?
Anything can happen. I agree. Besides, the pressure is too high for Tigres not to make it. Like, I agree with you. Like, they will.
Yeah, and I mean, let's talk about that playoff race because it's getting pretty exciting. The team that they were playing, Chivas, is one of the teams that, in my opinion, they're in there. You know, going into this match day, they were second and they are still second because Monterrey stumbled today against Santos Laguna as we were going on a pod. And I know you have an opinion on that because you wanted to make a point that Monterrey are pretty much in there now and that Santos Laguna has to watch it. But you kind of have to change your plan a little bit now, don't you?
Yeah, like I was. So, for example, for me, so for Tigres to go in, a team has to go out, right? And, like, I still have the feeling that Santos is the team that is going to drop that spot. But getting a point out of, like, Monterrey, even playing home, it's important. But, like, you mentioned as well, is that the race is pretty tight. Like 1 to 5th, it's 25 to 20. And then you have 3-18s, 2-17s, 1-16, 2-15s, 1-14. Like, it's super tight. Anything could happen now, right? But yeah, I was surprised that Santos got a point out of Monterrey. And Tigres has to start climbing. I see Pumas also I think that Pumas will also be climbing soon. I see those two teams that are currently out of their playoff spot getting into the playoff spot. That's my prediction, to say it.
And Preston, we have a bit of a love affair with Pumas, don't we? We all love Nico Castillo. I was looking forward to the game against Toluca, who are shooting out the lights in this Clausura. They're by far the best team right now. And Castillo wasn't playing, sadly. Pumas are very attractive to watch, but stability is not their thing, isn't it?
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah, it just seems like, you know, with Palencia, he's a dedicated heavy metal fan and his teams play like it. A little bit like Jurgen Klopp, right? Only maybe better style and clothing. I struggle with that side because I love watching Pumas. I don't have a Liga MX game team yet, but I tend towards Pumas. I mean, it's the shirt alone draws your eyes to them. the way, you know, they have that massive Puma printed on the shirt instead of a logo, that makes it iconic in my books anyways. And they're just a lot of fun to watch. But you look at their goal differential, it's 20-18. And we're talking about 12 games here, right? I mean, are they playing hockey? Or what are they doing?
I do think that if they do get into the playoffs, they're gonna need to shore up their defense a little bit, because I mean, conceding 18, there's only one other team in the Ligia race that has conceded 18 goals, and that's Tijuana. And they're firmly in a good spot to make it into the playoffs. So they're gonna need to shore up their defense in order for them to make a good playoff push into these last few games.
That's a very good point. I agree with you. I think that the defense is a difference maker that will allow them to get into that race.
And is that what Palencia will have to do? He is heralded as the next great coach out of Mexican football, you know, because of his style of play. But, you know, in the end of the day, they invested a lot of money to get someone like Castillo. In the end of the day, if he doesn't make the playoffs, that is going to be raising some major question marks, won't it? And yes, style of play is fantastic, but we're talking about a team that's put down money, you know, to be successful again. I personally think that he will have to, sooner or later, he will have to answer that and, you know, get in the performances that are necessary to get into the playoffs. And it's tight. I mean, you mentioned it going into this match day, and we're seeing the results come in. As we're talking, America is struggling against Necaxa to get 3 points. So, you know, it's staying tight, because America, it would be on 19 points in this case. And it's all the results coming in. I mean, we were joking about how we're going to basically do this live. And we basically can, because we're watching all these Liga MX results coming in. Pumas are playing Atlas right now. It's only 1-1, right? And as I'm watching the game on one of the screens here, it doesn't look like one of the teams is getting a winner. And when you look at all the teams, Querétaro drop points, Guadalajara drop points, it's such a tight race. And I mean, we're all going to look tomorrow at Toluca's playing Cruz Azul, and Cruz Azul has been shambles, has been horrible in this clausura. So we all expect that Toluca will probably win or more or less secure their playoff spot. So I just wonder, you know, are we going to really have to wait till the last match day until we really find out what's going to happen?
Isn't that what you love about Mexico, though?
Like, absolutely, man. Like, I mean, bring it on.
That's exactly my point. Like, it's going to be tight till the end, and it's going to be fun and entertaining till the end. And now, and the seats, like the brackets, like, won't even matter, because playoffs in Mexico, it's free for all. So that's what you love about Mexico, though. I'm fine with that.
For sure. I'd love to make a wild hope. Veracruz is only 3 points away from the eighth spot. And right now they've got a firm grip on that last spot in the relegation table. Is it actually feasibly possible for them to make it into the Liga and get relegated within the same season?
Well, we've been looking, but there is no actual relegation calculator, and my calculus is nowhere near good enough to actually determine how it goes. They're not mathematically relegated yet. And we looked at that relegation battle. Quick reminder, it's the last three full seasons and the average points. And if you're lowest in those average points, you're the team relegated. And they're sitting at 1.1327. 17th place is Chiapas with 1.1429. So it's almost a full 0.01 point difference between the two. Now there's 4 games left after this match day, right? You throw out your calculator and you tell me whether or not they're relegated yet. I would say no, because the little R that hasn't appeared next to their name yet in Wikipedia in the live standings. They pretty much will have to make the playoffs if they want to stay in the league. That's basically what Morelia has been gunning for. And, you know, that's basically the only way you can do it. Morelia were last going into this, and they are on, you know, they're on playoff course, more or less. They're in that pack of teams that could make it. It's going to be an interesting story to watch, because technically it's possible for them to make the playoffs and get relegated.
That would be quite a story, eh?
Oh, yeah, and it's Mexico. So remember, you can actually buy the license from the team that's going up. So relegation isn't exactly relegation. And Was I saying live updates? America just scored an amazing goal and is now up with 5 minutes to go to Necaxa. Wow. Yeah, that's what we love. Liga MX, you know, as we bring you the live updates. You guys seeing this?
Incredible. Necaxa deserves to be down just for not starting Maxi Barreiro. That's what they get.
Yeah, and I mean, okay, you know, that gives America a pretty sure 3 points. That changes the table quite significantly. That will make them fifth if this is the final score. Oh, let's just assume that's it. I want to hear from you guys. You know, we have a look at the top eight. Where is it going? Who is going to be the eight teams in the playoffs? And I'll start with you, Javier.
Do I have to make it in a correct order?
No, just name eight teams. I think correct order is too much.
I think that we agree that Toluca, Chivas, and Monterrey have a shoe-in already. So I would stay Toluca, Chivas, Monterrey, Tijuana, Atlas, Tigres, Pumas.
Atlas. No more Morelia? That would have, that's my dark horse. But before I reveal my eight, I'm going to go to you, Preston. Your eight teams that will make the playoffs.
It's difficult, man.
It's so tight right now. It's difficult to name eight right now. I'm going to go Toluca, Chivas, Monterrey, Tijuana, Santos, America, and Tigres.
Yeah, so that leaves me. I mean, I just feel that the top four, Toluca, Guatala, Monterrey, Tijuana, they got it. I think America will have it. Pachuca, from what I've seen from them, they look very good too. I'm not sure about Tigres, so I'm going to go completely out there and say they're not going to make it.
Okay.
And I'm going to probably eat humble pie later on. And I'm going to say Pumas, and I'm going to say Morelia. And Morelia is going to sneak in his eighth spot. So those are my wild predictions, my wild Liga MX predictions. Curious to see where we're gonna end up, but you know, as we conclude this match day, you know, this midday match day, and we remember this match day took place because of that referee strike that we've covered quite thoroughly on both on Football Citadel but also on the World Football Index, and this is basically kind of thrown our planning a little bit in the wind because you know, we record this with the games in mind. But, you know, with that in mind, I want to pick for both of you. I want you to each pick a Liga MX game and an MLS game that you're going to watch on this weekend. And I'm going to go with you first this time, Preston.
No doubt in my mind. Tigres versus Pumas. That's going to be a great game to watch. Whenever it comes to MLS, the Cascadia Cup is going to be a great one to watch. But I'm going to give that one to you, Manu, since you're up in the Northwest. So for mine, I am going to go with, I'm going to go Red Bulls versus DC United. I think that'll be an interesting game to watch. DC is finally getting their footing in front of goal. I think it'll be a very interesting game to watch.
Oh, that's a bold choice. Javier, what's your choices?
Okay, I'll start with the MLS. And I'm going to go for, okay, and this is going to be hard, but I'm going to go for Philadelphia Union versus NYCFC, because I have a feeling that this is Philadelphia's day, finally. Uh-huh. That's a feeling I have. NYCFC, it looked very beatable the last match, so it's possible. And that's why I'm definitely going to watch that. And in Mexico, okay, Tigres Pumas is extremely attractive. I'm not going to be repeating what Preston said. So I will be leaning towards Santos Atlas because they're like right in the middle of that tight battle and definitely going to be fun, especially considering Atlas style of play. So I'll go for Atlas Santos. How about you, man?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I will go definitely for Tigres against Pumas. I'm glad you didn't steal my sandwich there. Because that is, that's going to be an interesting game to watch. And
Without a doubt.
And it's the Easter weekend. I know from living in the Catholic part of Germany that's always an important weekend to watch football. So that's definitely going to be mine on Saturday. And it's probably a game that we're going to cover a lot on, you know, all the networks that I've mentioned. And then, of course, on Friday, I mean, I'm not only going to watch it, I'm actually going to cover it. I'm in Vancouver on Friday to cover the first of the Cascadia derbies. And the first game in the Cascadia Cup between Vancouver and Seattle. And we'll, of course, give you feedbacks. And there will be the press conferences, as always, will be on the World Football Index. So look out for that. And I think that's going to be a very, very interesting game to watch. Anyways, before we go, Javier, any last thoughts?
Yeah, just an honorable mention. This weekend also Portland plays Sporting Kansas City, and that it's set up to be a very entertaining game as well. So I would suggest for an audience to definitely also try to watch that. Sporting Kansas City plays with a high line of defense, and Portland, its offense is very efficient at this point. So it's going to be a very, very interesting game. So just a suggestion.
But there's always a lot of games to watch. You know, and at this point, I am going to wrap it up. And, you know, this, as we are getting closer to this match day, and there's so much to watch, so many interesting storylines happening, both sides, or, you know, all three sides of the border, because we technically cover three countries. But, you know, before I go, I want to find out, Preston, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at PW116. You can catch the show along with my other show, FCD Talk, on the All In Sports Talk Network. You can follow them at All In Sports Talk. It's 24/7 football radio. It's growing by the week. It's a great place to catch some football content.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely give that a follow and check it out. Javier, you're always busy. You're watching lots of football. Where can people find you? And I believe you have an article that you probably want to plug.
How convenient of you to mention that. Yeah, definitely. So you can find me on Twitter at ZAVXAV, in which I cover different leagues. Like Manu mentioned, I watch a lot of football, not soccer, football. And recently I wrote an article about that is up in the Football Grad Network that covers the two teams that sit at the top of the table in the Ecuadorian League. That it's very entertaining because those two teams playing an opposite style of play. So please make sure to read the article. I'm completely sure that it will spark your interest in the Ecuadorian Football League, especially nowadays. And besides that, I'll be in the Copa Libertadores pod for the World Football Index for this week. So make sure to check that out as well.
Yeah, definitely. World Football Index has a whole bunch of shows. The South American shows, both the, you know, general South American show and the Copa Libertadores are two of my favorites. And if you have not listened to that yet, do, because it's always a fantastic listen. And, of course, I'm also, you know, on the Football Grad show, which came out yesterday. And, you know, we covered everything that's going on in Eastern Europe on that one. And then, of course, there's the Bundesliga, the Gegenpressing, podcast, with everything that's going on in German football. And you can follow me personally at Homo Sovieticus and all the writing of the Football Grad Network that got mentioned here at Football Grad Live. Well, this is it. We'll speak to all of you next week. Exciting times in Mexico, Canada, and the United States. And till next time, bye-bye.